Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, since early February, many of the 166 detainees still at Guantanamo Bay are on a hunger strike. You may have seen the op-ed in the New York Times this week by Samir Naji Al-Hassan Makbel, one of at least 10 detainees on strike being force-fed. He describes it as incredibly painful, not to mention the profound despair of indefinite detention. He writes, quote, "There is no end in sight to our imprisonment. Denying ourselves food and risking death every day is the choice we have made," unquote. Joining us now is Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Professor Greenberg, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, the government has claimed that about 40 detainees are taking part in the strike. Lawyers for the detainees say it is more like 130 of them. Do you have a clear picture of what's actually going on at Gitmo?
Well, we only have as clear a picture as we can have of putting things together. The government upped its figure today to 52, basically saying that there are at least a third of them that are on a hunger strike. People in touch with defense attorneys and others are estimating much more, as you suggested. But we don't have, and so there's no way to know because we have two different narratives going on. But if you want a description of what was going on, is this is not protest, as so many of the earlier hunger strikes were, particularly the two big ones. This is really despair, and this is what it looks like. And so it's a desperate situation, and just like the op-ed that you referred to, talking about the painfulness of the tube feeding and the these people have just given up, and one sign of them giving it up, as you know, associated with this hunger strike, is giving back their Qurans. So it is a extremely troubling situation.
That detainee, Samir Makbel, who wrote the op-ed, describes it this way, quote, "Two times a day they tie me to a chair in my cell. My arms, legs, and head are strapped down. I never know when they will come. Sometimes they come during the night, as late as 11 p.m. when I'm sleeping. There are so many of us on hunger strike now that there aren't enough qualified medical staff members to carry out the force feedings. Nothing is happening at regular intervals. They are feeding people around the clock just to keep up." Is he actually asking to be allowed to die?
Seems like that's what he and other detainees are asking for. And force feeding is considered cruel, inhuman treatment. This recent report that came out from the Constitution Project, this bipartisan report on detention and torture, talks specifically about force feeding and how it violates standards of humane treatment. And this has been a running theme since the beginning of Guantanamo. The earliest hunger strike was within the first couple of months of the opening of Guantanamo. So, yes, they're being allowed to die.
More from Makbel's op-ed. "I will never forget the first time they passed the feeding tube up my nose. I can't describe how painful it is to be force-fed this way. As it was thrust in, it made me feel like throwing up. I wanted to vomit, but I couldn't. There was agony in my chest and throat and stomach. I had never experienced such pain before. I would not wish this cruel punishment upon anyone." But on the other hand, Karen, is there a damned if you do, damned if you don't position that the Gitmo officials are being put in? I mean, what if the United States government allowed 130 people to literally kill themselves out of the 166 detainees that are at Gitmo? How would the world look at that? And how would human rights advocates look at that?
Well, you know, I don't really like when the question is posed like that. I understand why you pose it that way. But the choice, at least to me, is not between should we let them die or should we force feed them. The choice is between can we give them a reason to live? Prisoners who have gone through some kind of process do not just want to kill themselves for no reason. This is a camp-wide protest, which is basically a sign of saying, we give up. You know, 86 of those individuals have been cleared for release and show no signs of being released. So this notion of indefinite detention, even if you've been released, is pervasive, and it can so it's about addressing those concerns, which I should add, during the first hunter strike in 2002, the way the commander of the base, Michael Leonard, went about this was to meet individually with the detainees and to talk to them and to not to let them free, but to talk to them about what would get them to give up, each one personally, the hunger strike. And it didn't change the tenor of Guantanamo in terms of it being a detention facility, but it ended the hunger strike. And so I don't see the choice as between let them die or force feed them. They have to figure out what to do about this issue of indefinite detention. They have to face it, the United States government. They have to face it, and they have to solve it.
Karen Greenberg from Fordham Law School, we can take your phone calls on this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And in the past 10 years, the U.S. government has sent detainees to at least 52 countries, according to The Times and NPR, 86, which I think is the number that you mentioned, of the current 166 have been approved for release. That was 3 years ago. 56 of those are Yemeni, but the Yemeni government won't have them, right?
Well, I think it's more complicated than that. I think it's that the United States does not want to release them to as unstable a country rife with terrorism of a variety of sorts.
Making that decision? Is there clarity? Is it the Yemeni government or is it the American government?
My understanding that this is it's batted around both ways, but the United States government has shown no indication of actually wanting to return these people to an unstable environment. That's my understanding of it. But the Yemenis recently, after the hunger strike, sort of in a kind of, you know, sort of just to poke at the United States, issued some statements saying they wanted their detainees back.
Oh.
So since the very beginning of Guantanamo, we've been in a standoff with the Yemenis who originally did not want them back.
And of the other 80 prisoners who have not been approved for release, only 3 have been convicted. So what about the other 77? What kind of legal limbo are they in?
Well, so 48 of them are considered to be will be held in indefinite detention, according to the Obama administration, which is the same number that the Bush administration gave us. They will not be tried, but they will be reviewed, I hope, periodically. I think that's the understanding.
And their classification is too dangerous to release, but not eligible for trial?
Right. Not eligible for trial.
And why not eligible for trial? Yes, meaning, I'm sorry.
Not eligible for trial, meaning not enough evidence presentable in court that they can try them, but they, you know that they would be a risk. And then there are 36 or so that they think will be tried by some form of military trial. There are the high-value detainees, the 9/11 defendants, et cetera, who will be tried through the military commissions that we're seeing now. And then there are the ones who have been cleared for release that you mentioned.
So is that the main issue as far as you're concerned? Is it these who have been cleared for release, the 86, mm-hmm. But are not being released, and those against whom there is not enough evidence to convict them at a trial, but they're in legal limbo perhaps for the rest of their lives?
Yes, absolutely. And it's both of those categories that are feeling the despair of Guantanamo, because even if you do get process and you still end up at Guantanamo without any light at the end of the tunnel, and then what's happened with some of them, like Adnan Latif, who committed suicide in recent months, who thought he was cleared for release and then found out he hadn't been cleared for release, and sort of bouncing around on an emotional scale that is a form of cruelty. And eventually you just give up. And as one gives up, the next gives up. And their lawyers are not able to give them any sense of hope, apparently. And that's where we stand.
Stephen in Marble Hill, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. What would happen if the administration said, we're not going to close the camp, and we're going to keep it there, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, but we're going to internationalize this. We're going to declare it a prisoner of war camp officially. We're going to comply with all
Geneva Convention
pertaining to prisoner of war camps.
Why not that, Karen? That's an interesting proposal. Of course, that assumes that there's a war that can end, and then they can be released. Is that why not?
Well, that's one of the reasons. The other reason is the original reason they took them out of prisoner of war status was they wanted to be able to interrogate them beyond the name, rank, and serial number, and not just necessarily torture, but that they wanted to be able to interrogate them more. And it was an information collecting center as much as anything else. That was what Guantanamo was intended for. And so once they've violated the rules of the prisoner of war status, how can they return to that category? That's one of the premises. I've always thought that the sooner you could give them, under whatever, they're bending other rules, why not bend these, return them to prisoner of war status, that would be fine. But again, it's not going to solve the problem, because the authorization for the use of military force, which is what authorizes us to detain people who are Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and associates, associated forces now, it may run out. So it may not, we may end that AUMF, who knows? There are a lot of people who say this version of the war on terror is over. And so it will leave the question out there forever, because will the United States ever, under any circumstances, be willing to release them? And apparently the country doesn't want to be put in that circumstance.
Sam in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning, and I really greatly appreciate the opportunity. And let me just flat out tell you, first of all, I am Egyptian. I am born and raised Muslim. I know Islam very, very well. I lived half of my life in Egypt and half of my life in America. And with this lovely lady that you have interviewed, I just, by the way, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm right in the middle. I don't understand where the compassion comes from for these people. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. Force feed them, you're a bad guy. Let them die, you're a bad. Let me just tell you something. For these people, and I know how they end up there, this is the best case scenario for them, that literally Uncle Sam is taken care of.
Sam, how about for the 86 people who have actually been approved by the U.S. authorities for release, but they won't release them? Do you have compassion for that?
No, absolutely zero. But even, I mean, they might have, like, different degree. I mean, one of them is, like, a super killer, and the other one is, like, maybe only kills two people. But I can tell you, these people have their way. And I'm a, you know, you go back to history. One of the number one guys that comes after, what's his name, Osama bin Laden, is the Egyptian guy. And just let me remind you, this guy was in prison, and he was one of the people that killed Sadat. And, of course, we know the rest of it. You let those people go, I'm telling you, they're coming back.
Sam, thank you very much. And that, I guess, articulates why the U.S. government is categorizing at least some of the people too dangerous to release, even though they don't have enough evidence to try. So, Karen, you can react to that, and we have under a minute left. Also, tell us what comes next.
Yeah, well, just to react to that quickly, it's hard to believe, given the breadth of the material support use law in the United States, it is extremely hard to believe, at least for me, that we can't find a way to try these individuals. We've tried hundreds of individuals accused of lesser crimes associated with terrorism in the federal court. So it just happens to be the other side of how to view this. It's not just about releasing them. The ones we've released, we have to find a way to release, and that's the bottom line. In terms of what to come, this hunger strike is a game changer, because it is colliding with the military commissions that are going on. And although there are many who would like to separate the military commissions, the 9/11 trials, defendants' trials, from the detention mission, they are not separable. This is all of a piece, and it stands to undermine the commissions as well as the initial purpose of Guantanamo.
Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School, as the hunger strike by 50-plus, at least as Guantanamo, goes on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, our Earth Month series continues. This time it's your paper recycling calls for the New York City Deputy Sanitation Commissioner for recycling. Stay with us.